Hi, Robert. Nice to meet you. Today, we are, of course, discussing the Northmen.
He's here. He's here.
Mother! Father is here!
The king, my lady. The king.
Your fate is set and you cannot escape it.
I loved that the first thing I read about your Northmen journey was, I never wanted to make a Viking film. So can you tell me what initially repelled you from Vikings and then what changed your mind?
It was the macho stereotype, which, by the way, is part of it. And then the right-wing misappropriation of Viking culture. Those two things really repelled me. But when I took a trip to Iceland, the power of these landscapes led me to pick up the Icelandic sagas. And then I became very interested in Vikings. And then a couple of years later, Alexander Skarsgård and I had lunch, and he said he's been trying to make a Viking movie for 10 years, and it became real.
Yeah, and that, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about the film was, and I wonder if you think this from studying Viking culture, was the strong presence of intuition. And I wonder if that's something that we may have lost or think that we've lost. And then in real life, you know, you meet someone and it's kind of serendipitous, but you don't have the seer that will tell you this is your journey or this is your prophecy. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly now that we're all like glued to these guys, we're stepping further and further away from intuition. We don't even have memory thanks to those machines. And when I was working on The Witch is when I first started to really get, because I grew up in the countryside, but I was in my imagination and not in nature. And it's in studying the past that I've learned more about agricultural traditions and, you know, living in nature and knowing, you know, what the seasons are and the weather and all this is telling you. And if you're in Viking culture, like, and you have this pagan religion that's more tied up into nature and the significance of these things, like, it's going to make everything around you alive and you are going to be more in tuned with it and therefore have more intuition about what's going on. So yeah, that's definitely there.
Yeah, I mean, and in things like witches and seers, I wonder if nowadays we call them empaths or people that are, you know, somehow able to channel. Like, I thought it was a really interesting choice of casting to put Bjork as the seer, because I think songwriters in particular, you know, often talk about channeling.
Well, I mean, I think her persona is very much that of a shamaness in you know, for you know, that's I think that's how a lot of people experience Bjork. So she just needed to put on the costume and show up, really.
Yeah, but I'm sure she was inhabited her part, you know, from her experience, if you know what I mean. Well, that's what I like to believe.
Of course, so, yeah.
And of course, then there's the story. So tell me about the story of Amleth, which most people will recognise as Hamlet. And did you feel that that was something that you wanted to reclaim, or did it just work beautifully with your elemental retelling of or a presentation of the Viking world?
Yeah, a few days after meeting with Alex, I discovered that Shakespeare's Hamlet was based on a Nordic legend, the story of Amleth, and it's, I mean, it's the same story basically, and that was really exciting because I, you know, if I could indulge in Viking religious culture, mythology, ritual culture much more if I have a simple narrative that everybody knows. You know, this is a big, expensive movie for like broad audiences, so we need, people need to be able to follow the plot, and this was my key into making sure that was going to happen.
Like, I know that it wasn't a gladiator or a Braveheart that you wanted to make at all, but were you wanting to immerse us in Viking culture so that we actually experienced what it was to think and be Viking, if you know what I mean? It's very easy to look back at that time with our modern sensibilities and believe that we can see what they thought or understand them or see them as somehow not as developed or advanced in lots of ways. But was your intention to really immerse us into a place where our thinking would adapt? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly is my intention. And yeah, you have to remember that, like, humans were not less smart. And, you know, there are things we have lost to time that are better than what we can do now. Obviously, like, the ships that we are making today are more technologically advanced than Viking ships in some ways, but in some ways not. And the people who recreate Viking ships today can't make them as fleet and flexible and fast as the Vikings did, who are making them all the time. There are certain kinds of armor from the later Middle Ages that no one's figured out how to reproduce. There are certain kinds of fabric from, you know, the early modern period that no one has figured out how to reproduce. You know, the skill that people had with the technology that was in their time, they were as skilled with that as we are with what we have now.
And going to the making of the film, Ethan Hawke compared the experience to the making of Apocalypse Now. And obviously that was, I mean, we've seen the making of Apocalypse Now as well, and just how traumatic that was for some of its actors. And I wonder, in one respect, it must have been so fabulous to be all these working parts of the giant that you describe and bringing the giant to life. But also it must have been incredibly taxing. Can you tell me about some of the highs and lows of how you work?
Well, me and my DP, Jaron Blaschke, shoot single camera. You know, typically you shoot a movie like this with multiple cameras. You know, if you're doing it with a high level of craft, it helps you make your day and gives you a few more options and a little bit of safety. If you have a low level of craft, you're just shooting a bunch of stuff that you can put together later. But here we've chosen through the entire film exactly where we're placing our camera, and it's not going anywhere else but that. And with that, we're shooting these incredibly long, unbroken takes, and those are difficult. If you're shooting a raid of a village that requires hundreds of extras and many, many stuntmen and horses and farm animals and children, and you're shooting that in two very long choreographed shots, everything has to go right. And if it doesn't go right, you have to go back to the beginning and start over again. It requires a lot of discipline, but you know, everyone, it's an exciting discipline. You do get addicted to the feeling of chasing the success of shots like that.
I can imagine, absolutely. And also Ethan Hawke also commented on the choreography, saying that he's never seen it in a film before. And he felt that what you were doing was an actual first for film. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. Like, there's stuff like this in The Revenant, you know, Birdman's all one shot, 1917's all one shot, whatever. Like, you know, so it's not like no one's doing this kind of thing at all. But I hope that, you know, and by the way, those aren't my influences. My influences are older films. But I think that there's certain things about the cinematic language in this film that are certainly unique to a film being made today.
And also, like, immersing your people in the cold and the wet, like Anya Taylor-Joy said when you shouted, "Act cold," she was like, "I don't need to act cold, I'm freezing." I mean, was there a point where everybody had an elemental moment of despair in the freezing cold? I mean, were all the actors absolutely immersed as you see them?
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone is dressed in Viking Age clothing. And I heard that Daniel Day-Lewis refused to wear a warm-up coat when he was shooting Gangs of New York because he wanted to be in character. But then he got sick. Unlike his character, he wasn't used to it. you know, and so, you know, and I was very insistent that people needed to, you know, wear their warm-up coats in between takes. But, I mean, we were in incredibly brutal, cold environments, and some of these Vikings got to wear a lot of fur and layers of wool, but, you know, Anya, who plays an enslaved person, is basically wearing a burlap sack, you know, and Alex oftentimes is naked. So it was hard.
Was it Alexander? He did dive off that boat into the Icelandic Sea, didn't he?
He was really swimming the swimming was in Ireland, but he was really swimming in the sea. Yeah,
that in and of itself was extremely impressive, and his preparation was something in and of itself, wasn't it? Like, he has dreamed of doing this his entire life. His commitment was second to none. Can you tell me about working with him on this film?
It was a pleasure. I mean, he transformed his body into a machine, a work of art. He became a beast. He created this posture of holding years of trauma on his shoulders. But he wasn't going to be anything less than perfect because as you mentioned, unlike me, he's been obsessed with Vikings since he was a kid. And so, as much as he has talked in press about how I drove him to the edge with my perfectionism, I can think of many times when Alex was the one who asked for one more take to get it right.
And with your setup of shot, I mean, they are so intricate and there was so much going on. And I heard that for you, any kind of editing was just torture. Can you talk me through how you got it down to the 2.5 hours that you did?
You know, I was trying to be very brutal. On The Lighthouse, I was quite precious. And, you know, I had to watch it again for a new Blu-ray release or something. I think I could get 5 minutes out of that movie, and it would be maybe a little better, or certainly not any worse. But I was really trying to be really brutally honest with myself and not be precious about anything. But, you know, my instinct, you know, this is my first really entertaining movie, and my instinct is not to be entertaining. And so there was a lot of studio pressure to push me to make the most entertaining version of the film, and I needed that pressure. And it was really difficult, and it was really painful at times. You know, we got there, and you know, this version is the director's cut. There will not be some longer version on the Blu-ray. There are some scenes that I think are pretty cool that I'm glad are not in the film that will be on the Blu-ray for you to learn some more stuff about Vikings, but you'll also see why they aren't in the movie.
Fair enough. And then I want to talk about the throat singing, because I found that extremely gnotic and shamanic and trippy and beautiful, really beautiful. So tell me about using that as much as any score.
Yeah, there's an account of someone who goes to Hebidi, which is one of the Viking capitals, and he describes singing that sounds like the growling of dogs that, like, comes from their throats, which has led a lot of people to hypothesize that maybe Vikings had a throat singing tradition. We don't know, but that passage has stuck with people. And there is a genre of music that me and my composers call shitty Viking music, but but it's known as, like, you know, neo-folk, pagan neo-folk. But it's this kind of post-metal music that uses Viking Age instruments and singing techniques, and there's a lot of throat singing in that. And, you know, and some of it's cool. Some of it really is cool, and some of it inspired things that we were doing in the score, like the throat singing. And in fact, Ingvar Sigurdsson, who plays the He-Witch, he learned how to throat sing for that role, which is pretty cool.
That is very cool. Well, I'm quite tempted to take it up myself.
There's a band from Siberia called Nitland, and Natasha, the singer there, she does throat singing, and her female throat singing sounds pretty wild.
Oh, that is great to know that there's a woman that does it. I will definitely check that out. And finally, Robert, what can we learn from the Vikings? You know, I know that we've lost so much, and I mean, the world that we live in is quite something at the moment. What was your takeaway from studying the Vikings?
My takeaway, sadly, is that, like, we haven't really changed, because as sophisticated and interesting and beautiful as Viking culture, you know, was, the violence and brutality is horrifying. And so here we are yet again repeating ourselves.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, Robert. It's been an absolute pleasure, and really good luck with The Northmen. It's an absolutely extraordinary film.
Thank you. Very kind.